section is reshaping your church's missions program, moving from pens to purpose. And let me start with a word of prayer, and then I'll introduce myself a little bit more. Father, thank you so much for the opportunity you've given us to be here today. Thank you for the message we just heard. And Lord, I pray that we would all, in our different roles at our churches, that we would be faithful, look to accomplishing your mission and really striving to see you glorified through the preaching of the gospel and planting of churches around the world. God, thank you for the fellowship we can enjoy here together, and thank you for bringing us all together today. And for this conference, Lord, I pray that we would be encouraged by your word. And Lord, I pray for this session that it would be helpful, Lord, for churches as they're trying to transition to being more purposeful about their missions programs. I pray these things in Jesus' name, amen. My name is Pearson Johnson, and I'm currently the director of student care at Bob Jones University. So my main job is working at Bob Jones. I do counseling for the most part. We provide biblical counseling for students. And I'm also involved at our local church, Morningside Baptist Church, on the missions committee for the church, and then also on the board of Open Door Baptist Mission there, which is a ministry of Morningside. Prior to that, I served here at Intercity Baptist for almost 20 years as a pastor of missions. So Pastor Doran's kind enough to let me come back, and this is always like coming home to us since we lived here for so long, and my wife grew up here in Allen Park, actually at the house right across the window here, across the parking lot. So we love Intercity and Detroit Seminary, and we're really thankful for this. Appreciated the session by Pastor Doran, and what I'm going to talk about really fits right in with what he was talking about as far as developing the missions program of Intercity, and how he came, and just to put it in that context, he came as a pastor here, and Intercity in the next 5 years took on several missionary families, and was, you know, before that had maybe supported 4 or 5 missionary families, so very few, if hardly any at all, and then increased rapidly to several missionary families, and I came on staff in 1997 after finishing my MDiv at Bob Jones, and I came up here and was working on a THM, but I came on staff as a church planting intern here in Intercity, and the goal was to spend a year learning from the church here and from the pastoral staff, Pastor Doran, Pastor Towns, Gene Towns, who's, we thought he retired, but I don't think he'll ever really retire. He's still here, teaches Sunday school. Pastor Juan Marino was on staff here at the time, and Pastor Tracy Fressel. And so I came in underneath a lot of good men that I had a lot to learn from. The plan was to learn for a year and then start a church in Ann Arbor, Lord willing. That was kind of I'd done a project on that in seminary, and so that was kind of the goal. And God ended up keeping me here for 20 years, so I never got to plant that church. And so that was but I got to be involved in helping others plant churches. So really, I settled into a role through some staff transitions, and we started the Student Global Impact Ministry at the time in 2000. So I settled into a role of helping coordinate that conference, and we started a mission board with Grace Baptist Mission, and got involved in church plants, and got more strategic about missions. And so I became the pastor of missions and evangelism, and I did that for 10 years. And then when we got some better evangelists like Dave Doran Jr. here, who took over the outreach program, I started doing missions and discipleship. And so that's what I did for the next 7 or 8 years when I was on staff. But during that earlier time, as we were getting more thoughtful about missions, we really needed to develop a better philosophy of missions. And so in your handout, I gave you that. We'll talk about that kind of at the end of my session, about that philosophy of missions. I'd like to go through that with you and kind of the thinking behind it. But what the main point of the session will be is how what we thought biblically led into developing that philosophy of mission statement that then really guided and guarded what we were involved in as a church from a mission standpoint. And so that, you know, I was able to help with that while I was a missions pastor. And now the Lord took us down to Greenville about 4 years ago, and hated leaving Detroit and inner city, but we felt God wanted us to invest some in college-age students, and so we moved down there. But the church ministry is always a big part of my heart and my life, and so we got engaged in our church. We joined a church right away and jumped right in. And so, again, it sounded like some of the same things. We're dealing with a church that had 40-some families and missionaries doing all kinds of things in all kinds of places, all great people. But Morningside and Open Door Baptist Mission both were driven more by adding to what was going on than driven philosophically by let's make sure we're strategically going in the right direction. And, again, I have lots of caveats, but the Lord has helped me to use my experience there to help encourage the church in reshaping their missions philosophy and support structure and even the mission board and how we work through evaluating and adding missionaries in some ways. But I'm not in charge of that, so I've been participating as a layperson, you might say, in the church, using my gifts in ministry to be involved. So I really appreciate that, but we're kind of right in the middle of that process. You can't really say where the middle is, because when you're in a larger church, especially, these things take 10 to 20 years to make some changes that end up coming under your philosophy. But I'm thankful for the opportunity to do that. So that's where we are. I have a lot of notes, and I'm going to kind of buzz through parts of it, because I know Pastor Doran's going to talk in his workshop a little more about the mission of the church. And so a lot of that, the center part of our notes deals with that, and that's his material primarily. I don't want to say I am of Doran, since we just heard this thing, but I'm so thankful to have been under his ministry and develop my philosophy of missions underneath that. And so I think because he's of Jesus and Paul, I think that I can say that. And so I really appreciate it. But that's his material primarily, so I'll buzz through that pretty quickly. Let's talk about reshaping our missions program. Churches and missionaries are called by God to partner for the sake of the mission, but many are uncertain what that mission is or what the goals are in missions, both from a missionary perspective and from a local church perspective. And I think especially for independent Baptist churches, again, that's our context here primarily. A lot of times the thought has been more about getting more pins on the lobby map than it has about being strategically involved and philosophically engaged in the mission. And that is certainly been the case in many churches and was in ours for a brief time, and also the church I'm involved in now seems to have been the case for several years. If we're going to give our money, prayers, and people, and sometimes our very lives for the spread of the gospel, then we as pastors and church members need to be purposeful about what we're doing and make sure we're doing the right things in the right way for the glory of God. And so we talk about reshaping our church's missions program. I have several reshaping points, and these are the big points, and then things that fall under that. And I want to first of all say this. The first step in reshaping a missions program is not just to wipe the board clean, you know, to pull the rug out from under people, to not appreciate what people have given their lives for. It's first of all to be grateful for what God has done and for those who have done his work. And I'm certainly not as young as I used to be. I think that's true about all of us. But I don't want to be the kind of person that says, okay, I see a problem and I want to change it and just, I don't care what the aftermath is. Okay. Because there are people doing things like digging wells or passing out medicines, or they're doing good things, and they spent their life doing it, and they've called it missions, and they haven't really thought through, maybe haven't thought through the biblical or philosophical ideals about what the Great Commission talks about, and they've really invested themselves in other people, and so they've done a lot of good stuff, and your churches and our churches have supported that, and we've developed relationships many times, and often what you'll find in your church is you'll have people that are actually relatives of your folks in your church, and they're, you know, so the church really kind of supported them because they were a relative, and you kind of didn't want to, you know, you might not have at the time wanted to cause any waves, and so So you have those kind of relationships involved as well. But really, as we start off in this, as we started off in this process, I remember very clearly, Pastor Doran, we had these conversations about this is a missionary we probably should not support, given what we're committed to right now. And he was like surprised. I was younger then for sure, but I was like, we need to change this, you know. And he was like, you know, let's make sure we support them for several more years so that they have the opportunity to get other support, to make transitions, things like that. He was extremely gracious, and so I really appreciated that example from him. But let's make sure we are grateful for what God has done and for those who have done His work. Let that kind of be the air, you know, the smoke in the air that we breathe as part of this whole process, and make sure we do so carefully. The second question, though, having said that, we also want to be willing to ask hard questions and to seek answers to them. For example, I have several questions here, and I'll probably spend more of my time talking about these questions and at the end talking about some of the process for making changes than about the philosophical ideals in between, just because we're going to hear that from Pastor and others, Pastor Doran and others here during the conference. But I did give you a lot of those notes in print, and I even left some blanks just to keep you awake during the doldrums of a workshop, which is always right in the middle somewhere. Be willing, especially when it warms up. It is warming up in here, isn't it? That's why this room was so cold at the beginning. See, it does warm up. Be willing to ask the hard questions. Here's some good questions to ask. And these are all in your notes. With so many options, where do we get involved? And I know I'm my experience has been mostly with established churches and people that already have missionaries, but some of you may be involved in church plants and newer churches or churches that really don't have much of a missions program. And so from the get-go, this is probably the biggest pressure point for people is there is so much that's happening under the banner. Let me say the banner, not the guys, but the banner of missions. And there's so much that's happening. It's so many people that need support, so many options for support. How in the world do I get involved? And that's been the case. There was some statistics that I saw a while back that talked about this missions giving. Where does it go? And one third, a general principle of missions was given to, in some way, alleviate human need or human suffering. 15% for evangelism and discipleship. 20% for education, 13% to literature, printing or distribution, 12% to child care relief and development, 10% to church growth, 8% to national support, 5% to medical issues, and 4% to media. And I'm sure the media has increased since I got these statistics. But you can see the distribution of missions giving is all over the place. It really is. It's touching on so many different areas. And so especially if you're a younger church and you're like, we want to start having a missions program again, missions involvement. Missions isn't a program primarily, but it is a budget line many times, so we have to think about it that way. We want to start getting involved in missions, cross-cultural missions and church planning, especially where do we start? And I think that's a good question to answer, and I think you have to start with what the scriptures start with, what the commission is, what really our mission is. And you have to make that the priority, but you have to start in the right place, or else you will be easily overwhelmed. Another good question to ask, I think, is missions primarily about the people or the task? And this is one I think we don't often think about. We get involved in missionaries appealing for support, and as churches, people used to ask me, "You're a missions pastor. You guys must get a lot of people that ask you for support." And I was like, "We do. We do get a lot of people." And we have to work through that. And we had a process for working through that. But often missions is primarily about the people, not about the task of taking the gospel and planting churches. You'd be like, why does that person have so easy of a time getting support? And someone else seems to be like, this is their pioneer missionary. They're going to a place that desperately needs churches. They have a hard time. I think the answer to that is often missions is a lot more about the people than it is about the task. In our culture, especially the support raising. And so we have to be focused on what has Christ called us to do as a church. And then, secondarily, who has Christ given us to do that task as servants of the Lord? And so it's not primarily a personality issue. It's about a task or a philosophical. What has Christ called us to do on the mission field? This is another kind of related question. Is missions a career or a calling? And each of these questions, you could have a whole workshop on each of them, right? So I'm only just touching on them and trying to provoke your thinking when it comes to we need to develop a good philosophy of missions in our church. But is missions a career or a calling? And some of that is, you know, that could go both ways. So if missions is primarily about a task that needs to be accomplished by the church, sending people to do it, then that's the way we have to think. We back up when someone says, missions is my calling. Well, what are you doing in missions? Or missions is my career. God's called me to this, so this is my life. Okay, so what are you accomplishing as far as the Great Commission goes? You know, what are you doing planting churches? What are you doing training pastors, indigenizing those missions opportunities? What are you doing in that? Well, I don't know. I'm not really involved in that, but I am a missionary. So that's what I'm kind of getting at the base level. Is missions a career calling? I do believe missionaries need to desire to be missionaries. They have to certainly have the qualifications to be missionaries, and many missionaries are missionaries of the best people. They give their life for the sake of God's work around the world, and so it is a career and calling as well. But we can't think of that as a primary thing. Who makes the decisions about missions or missionaries? This is another issue that came up in our general session toward the end. Who makes the decisions? And again, I believe biblically the local church must make the decisions about missions and missionaries. It's not volunteerism. If you volunteer, you go. It's if your church sees you, you certainly have to be willing, but if the church sees you as qualified and gifted to go as a missionary, then you go. And you're sent from a missionary. Who makes that decision? I was talking to a guy on deputation recently, and he already had his website material and plans made before he had a sending church, and it was published. And I was like, I think we got some things backwards. And I'm only talking as a person, as a member of a church, at that time. But I think that perhaps it would have been better to say, I believe God wants me to go there, but I want to talk to my church about this and make sure I'm engaged in my church so that they want to send me out there first, and then start pursuing the website at least and everything else. So that's something. Who makes those decisions? And I think the pastor and people of the church have to be the ones making the decision, because they are actually the ones that are they're responsible for the accountability, for the giving and the sending, the praying, the co-laboring from back here. So we have to think about that. Who is funding missions? Again, this is somewhat related, but it's a very good question when it comes to raising support. Who is funding missions? Is the church funding it? Are churches funding missions, or are people funding missions? And this comes around for the question about how you raise support as missionaries, or how a church supports missionaries who are raising support in various ways. And I'm more and more convinced that it's less and less popular for missionaries to gain their support from churches, certainly only churches. It's very much it's very unpopular. As a matter of fact, most people would say it's impossible to go to the mission field with only church support, local church support. But I am more and more convinced that we need to revitalize the thinking that churches support missionaries. People don't support missionaries on their own. And that's because of the role of the church in accomplishing the mission. And it's also because I've seen, it's by way of testimony, I've seen lots of people as a missions pastor here that are vitally a part of the mission of the missionaries that are going. They're here in this church. There is absolutely no way they could individually fund a missionary. No way. Maybe I better get $5 a month. Okay. But if they're part of a church that's behind the missionary, they are just as important in that accomplishment of funding the missionary as the person in the church that owns the corporation that is also giving and funding the missionary through the church. Okay. So that we all work together in community to support the mission of the church. I think this is just a very important thing, and most people out in missions say, I'm an absolute weirdo for emphasizing that. As a matter of fact, I put to the 10 people that follow me on Twitter, I put something about missionary, you know, missionaries appealing to churches, and I had a conversation with someone called me and had a conversation about that thing, the very concept. It's just strange for people to hear that emphasis, but I guess I do so because the church is the sending organization of missions, and I've seen how people in the church can really find satisfaction in accomplishing the mission as a part of the church that they never could have if they're individual donors. And I think that's just a real blessing to see that happen with people. And I could name names because I know these people, and I would get emotional, and I already am. So anyway, who all is involved in missions? And this is, again, falling off of this last question, who all is involved in missions? And I believe everyone in the church is involved in missions. Either you're a goer or you're a sender. And we're all involved in fulfilling the commission together. And so that relates to funding, but it also relates to the role of the church and how people are involved in especially prayer for the church, but in many ways of support, which I'll get to here in a little while. But when you think about missions as an all-church engagement process, then you do think differently about missions and your philosophy of missions. Another question, this is a little bit different. Are we fueling and furthering dependency or focusing on indigeneity? And what I mean by that is, are we trying to control what's going on in the foreign lands by planting churches but making them Western churches or funding them in such a way that they can never carry on the work themselves? That's what we call dependency. Or are we focusing from the beginning, from the get-go, are we focusing on going and accomplishing a task of planting churches and training leaders and then letting them take the task on from there? And if you're thinking that way, it's going to change a lot of the nature of the decisions you make at the beginning in your philosophy statement. So we need to ask the question, is what we're doing fueling or furthering dependency? And this comes into very practical measure when you're talking about supporting missionaries who are doing things that people that are national believers could do effectively. And instead, we're taking the place of those people that could actually help the church become self-supporting and national. And we're putting people from the states in those positions and leaving them there. Sometimes it can come to a point where we're supporting missionaries who are pastoring churches in foreign fields. They are serving as a pastor, and they plan to serve there for as long as they want to, or as long as God keeps them there, instead of being aggressive about finding elders for those churches and training them and then leaving the church in under their leadership. And again, there's a lot of flexibility there. So there's no particular timeline, but it's a question we need to ask from the front end. And that is, our goal should be to promote self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating churches on the mission field so that our missionaries go and then they move on or they leave or they come back, you know, either way. So we want self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating churches. And I think I saw on the list Rob Howell's doing a workshop on rapidly self-propagating churches. I think that'll be a very interesting one if you've thought through church planting movements, things like that. So what are the cautions or ways to think through the propagation of missions churches? I think that'll be a very helpful one. He's my brother-in-law. That's just, you know, for free. He's a great guy. Another question, are we co-laboring together with missionaries or primarily funding them? And again, this kind of comes back to, as we evaluate our own role as a church, are we primarily seeing this as a program? It's out there. We're involved. We got our Awana badge. Awesome. You know, or are we like, these are our people. We're involved with them. Funding is part of that, but there's a lot more to it than just funding. And I think that has to be a real part of our missions thinking. So those are the initial questions. There are probably more that you have, you know, questions that kind of form, how do I think about missions? But these are the questions that have kind of formed what I think about as I was a missions pastor and now how I'm involved in my church in Greenville as well. These are kind of driving questions that as we get information from missionaries or as we have people in our church that say, I want to go to the field or I want to be involved, or as we have, which we've had others like smaller mission boards say, well, can we part, you know, can we like merge with Open Door Baptist Missions, for instance? And we have to say, what is the essence of what this mission board is promoting and doing and what churches are behind it? So these are the kind of questions that I have to come back to myself as I try to help. Reshaping step number three, establish a biblical philosophy of missions for your church. This is probably has the most notes in it, but we'll go through it more quickly so that I can get to the end. But I did want to hit it because I don't want to just give you my opinions as if they're just my opinions based on my experience. But I want to give you my opinions because I've become convinced that this is a biblical philosophy of missions. And we have to act upon a very biblical philosophy of missions. So establish a biblical philosophy of missions for your church. Get Pastor Noren's book For the Sake of His Name. It lays out these principles in text. And so it's a fuller version. It's on Kindle. It's also available, I think, in print as well. I'm not sure if it's downstairs. Anyone know if there are copies of that downstairs? And you might have even got one in your bag. I'm not sure. But if you don't have it, get that and read it, and you'll be helped by it. But establish a biblical philosophy of missions for your church. Ask the question, what is the mission of our church? What is it? And answer the question biblically. How can we be involved as a church? Who can we be involved with? And some of the question, how can we be involved? That can depend on the makeup of your church. Okay, that's who's gifted for what in your church. You may have a particular flavor of involvement in missions that another church might not have. And that's good. I know a church that have men that love to take trips to help build things. As long as that doesn't take the place of someone on the field building it, you know, that can be a real blessing to missionaries. Other church might be like, we have nobody like that. You know, I mean, Dr. Compton always says what? These hands are made for books, right? Not tools. So he would say that. And so your church may have a particular flavor or makeup of giftedness that answers that question. How can we be involved? You might not have a lot of money. If you're a church plant in a place that is not a wealthy area, you're going to be like, we can't give very much. We can barely pay the bills, electricity, and the rent for our building. But you can do something for the mission. And so you may have people that can really pray. And that'd be awesome. Where can we be involved in particular? Acts 1:8 talks about Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth, the uttermost parts of the earth. And so I think this is, we won't get into this, but this can balance our missions program. You know, we have near cross-cultural missions opportunities. Certainly in Detroit you have that. In Greenville, I was surprised when I moved back to Greenville. I'm going to Greenville. There's not going to be any diversity there. It's like, and I've gotten there and I've realized that's certainly not true. Greenville is way more diverse than I remembered it being, as far as religious ethnicity and socioeconomic issues, and so there's a lot of ways to be involved there. But that is Judea and Samaria. Judea is church planting in the area. Samaria is near cross-cultural opportunities for discipleship and church planting. And the ends of the earth, of course, that goes a long ways, all the way around. So where can we be involved? Try to think about geographically, where can we be involved in balancing our missions program as well? And how can we continue involvement? Can we be involved in something that will continue? So don't just have flash in the pan involvement, but think ahead about how can we commit to this. These are initial questions to answer. Also, let me just throw this up there, but be aware of paradigms and missions. These are big theological, philosophical issues when it comes to missions. And David Hesselgrave has a book called Paradigms in Conflict, which if you're a pastor or a missions pastor, I think it'd be, or a missions committee chairman or something, read this to be familiar with these kind of paradigms. I'll just throw them up there. You know, the sovereignty free will debate affects the way people do evangelism and discipleship. So you got to be thinking through that. Restrictivism and inclusivism. You know, some people think that you can come to Christ apart from hearing the gospel itself. That's inclusivism. Or you can follow the light that you know, for instance. Or restrictivism believes that we do have to proclaim the gospel. Sometimes that's called exclusivism, but Hesselgrave calls it restrictivism. Common ground and enemy territory. We talked about that a little bit in our last session. Common ground. What are we looking for? Common ground, and that'll affect the way you do the mission. Or do we believe in proclamation-based evangelism primarily? And again, there's a lot more to say about that. But I actually did a whole workshop on that several years ago, and it was helpful for me to think through that. How should we approach adherence of other faiths? Holism and prioritism. For whom is the gospel good news? What do we have to prioritize when it comes to our mission, or do we minister to the whole person? Holism. Incarnationalism, representationalism. That's another big debate. Who is our missionary model? Is it Jesus or is it Paul? primarily as a missionary in the New Testament. Some people say we need to be incarnational ministers, so we need to do what Jesus did, and we would say that's, we can't do what Jesus did exactly. We're not the God-man. So we need to do what Jesus told the church to do, and then what we see Paul helping the church do in Acts, and telling them to do in the epistles. So that's the basis of that. Power encounters and truth encounters. You know, is it primarily about spiritual warfare, warding off spirits, doing prayer walks? And I'm not against prayer walks necessarily, if they're in the right context. Or is it about truth encounters? The conflict of the message of the gospel with the rejection of the gospel and messages that flow out of that. Amateurization or professionalization. Is this a call for missionaries of divine calling? Form and meaning. This is issues in contextualization. As you talk about what needs to be preached and how does that need to be preached, a lot of people believe in really adjusting the message a good bit to fit a culture, and others believe we need to keep the message the same because it's over supracultural. Okay, and so that's the basics. Countdowns and prophetic alerts. That is, if we go everywhere, does that mean Jesus is going to come back? Or are we trying to build the kingdom on earth? And that's kind of the last one, the kingdom of God and the church of Christ. What on earth is God building? Is it here and now? Or is it for eternity or for the kingdom when Christ returns? So these are all paradigm issues, theological issues, philosophical issues that kind of lie behind a lot of what takes place in missions. And I'm sorry to throw that out there because that's kind of like, you're like, oh, that's a lot of stuff to think about. And it is. Reed Hesselgrave's helpful for the most part. He's very helpful in laying out the debate. And allow him to see it. Yeah.
These are all his categories?
These are his, right. These are, he has a chapter on each one of these.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. I might state them a little differently, but these are his chapters. So he talks about each one of these. Doesn't necessarily resolve all of them, but he kind of gives an understanding of all of them. Now, our biblical philosophy of missions obviously comes from the scriptures and the Great Commission. So Matthew 28, you're probably familiar with that, I think. But maybe not everyone has studied Matthew 28, the Great Commission passage, and the other passages that deal with missions. Now, let me just read that quickly. Matthew 28, 16 through 20. The 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee, to the mountain which Jesus has designated. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some were doubtful. And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." We call that the Great Commission. We really call this the commission, the command Christ gave to his disciples that we see carried out after Pentecost as the church is established, and throughout the book of Acts as the message is spread and churches are established, and then through the epistles as Paul and John and Peter, they instruct the churches about what to believe and how to behave in the church. And we see that start to be fleshed out. The flesh is put on the bones of the churches that are established. And this forms the basis for our philosophy of missions. Some people will say that's too simple. Too simple to just say the Great Commission. Is that all you got? You know, I'm like, well, Jesus says that includes all authority given to us in heaven and on earth. So I think it's a lot to have. And I think we need to act on what Christ has given us and sometimes go back to what he has said to us. Let me give you a few points about this that Pastor Dorn has, as I said, spelled out in his book For the Sake of His Name, and he's probably going to talk about here and there in the conference as well. He'll talk about it a lot better than I do, and I think you'd really profit from this. The primary command here is to make disciples. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. And what is a disciple? It's a person who has turned from sin to Jesus Christ through repentance and faith, has been given new birth and eternal life, and is a committed follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. So we're to go out and make disciples. So when it comes to missions, the questions we ask is, what we're supporting and sending people to do, is it accomplishing this primary command? Are they making disciples? They're calling people to repentance and faith and under the lordship of Jesus Christ that is evidenced in a new birth, a new creation, and they're being gathered, we'll see in a minute, gathered into local churches. And so is this primary in our thinking? A believer in Christ is described as a disciple in the New Testament. What's the difference about thinking about disciple making? I think it changes the focus of the task. If we're just trying to get professions on one hand, we go shallow and wide. If we're making disciples, it takes a stronger commitment. And if we're not focused on making disciples at all, we can do a lot of good things, but not accomplish the mission. Okay, so this does hit on this side. You know, if we're just going to do evangelism, we're not saying, we're not calling people to repentance and faith. We're just trying to get people to make decisions, for instance. We can go shallow and wide. If we're trying to call them to repentance, faith, following Jesus as Lord and gathering them into local churches, I think that is the essence of the commission. If we're not even calling people to turn to Christ, then we're, and say we're doing missions, then we're not doing missions. We can throw that out. Biblical missions. Where do some go wrong? And this is just, again, some people have gospel in action. They're living the gospel out, but they're not telling people the message. They're not preaching the gospel. Gospel in words without action, that's a problem too. People are preaching the gospel, but they live as if they shouldn't be. Okay? And that's a problem. Gospel in words and action without community. They may be preaching the gospel, living the gospel as far as people can see them individually, but they're not bringing people together because the gospel demands community. Demands community. Gospel in words and action with community without enculturation. Okay, that's great. We've got words, we've got action, we've got community, but we're like a community from Detroit, Michigan in the middle of Timbuktu, Africa. You know, and that doesn't work very well because that's not an indigenous church. Gospel in words and action with community without reproduction. Again, a little different flavor. These are where we go wrong sometimes. So these are just some statements I think that are helpful. We preach, we do, we bring people together, but we don't. That's where it ends. And the church has to keep going, keep reproducing that philosophy for it to be accomplishing the mission. Because as soon as we accomplish missions, then the churches we plant need to be accomplishing missions. It's perpetuating. If it's not perpetuating, it's not really missions. How do we go about making disciples? Jesus did it by making God's name and word known. Okay? He did it by making the name known, by spreading the word. The early church did it by spreading the word. Again, I'm just throwing these up there. Can't remember. I think you have a few blanks. If you miss a blank and that's really important to you, then please ask. I'll go back. Because I'm the one that put the blanks in there. It's my fault. Fulfilling the commission, the implications of this, takes more than just proclaiming the gospel and involves spreading the word. Okay, not only preaching the gospel, but also preaching the scriptures. Okay, the word spread, preaching the message about the life, death, resurrection, the person and work of Jesus Christ, and the church as well. Now, the main thrust of mission must be establishing beachheads for long-term discipleship. So we're establishing churches that then can establish other churches and can disciple their believers that are gathered together. Preaching is a primary focus. Preacher training is important. Missionary must be an evangelist, church planner, and one able to train pastors. I don't know if I ever heard this said. I heard this said. If you can do, if you can't teach. Have you ever heard that? I never heard that. It's not in Proverbs 32. But I've heard that before. I've heard the addition. If you can do, if you can't teach, if you still can't go on deputation and be a missionary. Okay? It's a terrible thing to say. Don't ever say that. But sounds like something Donald Trump would tweet. But okay, missionaries need to be some of our most qualified and gifted people, definitely. Anyone that's going to serve the Lord on the mission field, they need to be smarter than me, they need to be more gifted than me, and be able to do a lot more than I can do. That's the way I always looked at it. Because a missionary needs to be able to proclaim the gospel, they have to be gifted in evangelism, they have to be able to plant churches and train pastors if they're going places. And that's why a lot of times, this is a side note, a lot of times it's good to have mission teams, groups that go together that they can complement each other with their gifts because the task is really great. It's really intense, and they have to do a lot. So let's be thinking about these implications as we talk about our philosophy of missions. The markers of success. Pastor Dorn uses task, territory, and something else. Target. Target, task, and territory. That's what he uses. I just changed the words, but I still give him credit. The markers of success. How do we know we're accomplishing the mission? Well, Jesus says, make disciples, baptizing them and teaching them. And so baptism is an ordinance of the church. Teaching is the duty of pastors. So we believe this is where we get the idea of that church planting is part of fulfilling the commission, because you're not baptizing and teaching apart from establishing local churches. Okay, baptism is not an ordinance that takes place in somebody's swimming pool or at a camp or whatever. It's an ordinance of the local church. And so baptism is something that has to be done in the community of the church as well as the Lord's Supper. And so this, you know, the fact that Christ commanded them to baptize meant that this means churches are being established. We observe what the disciples did in response to the book of Acts. I think this is important. what they did was preach the gospel, and they gathered people into churches together. And then, as Paul and Timothy especially talked about, ordaining elders in each city and each church, they established leadership for those churches. We see how the fulfillment of the Great Commission is described in 1 Corinthians 3. We just heard a great message on that. Churches planted, watered, and built up. And so if the churches aren't planted, they're not going to be watered and built up. I'm going to have baptism. I'm not saying watered means baptism. Someone could preach that, I suppose. Jack House could take that to the hoop. So Paul describes the establishment of the church as foundational to the success of the mission. It's foundational. The church is the pillar and support of the truth. And so if we are not establishing churches in other cultures, we're not representing the truth, displaying it and defending it there. And so churches must be established in other cultures. That's the marker of success. Some of the implications: we must aim to plant new churches. We must plant churches in their own culture. I use the word indigenous, and there are other words. National churches are used sometimes, enculturated churches that are reproducing themselves. Missionaries should transition to facilitating church planting movements on some fields. So you may have a missionary that says, I'm not a church planter primarily, but I'm actually facilitating a church planting movement by training pastors. I think that's a legitimate effort in missions, because it's trying to further the process of missions in different places. But they should be also training nationals that can train pastors. So that should be a part of it. Okay, especially where there are already indigenous bodies, through educating pastors, supporting church planting movements in beginning stages. I think that's part of the implication of the commission as well. The scope of missions, or the territory of missions. The word "all the nations" is used, panta ta ethne. It's a phrase used, all people groups or ethnic groups. There's some debate about how many people groups are there. You know, as Paul primarily talking about, Jesus and Paul talking about very small, minute groups of people that are very distinct, or geographical places. And I think we see both of these things involved. I'm teaching a class next week at Bob Jones on principles of church growth. So, you know, the homogeneous unit principle is a big principle in church growth, which I have problems with. But that is, some of the thinking has given way to, we have to plant churches among people so that the people in those churches are very much alike, you know, because that's the good thing behind that, is that's the gospel spreads more rapidly when people don't have to cross boundaries to come to Christ. But that's really not the nature of the gospel. I'm getting off track. Biblical support. The point of the commission is a continual spread or expansion. Let's not forget what's obvious, okay? To all the nations means that it should keep spreading to different places, okay? And so that's simple but obvious. The description of God being glorified is reflected in the diversity of peoples involved in worship. So this is kind of behind that, is that, and I just finished teaching through Ephesians in my Sunday school class in Greenville, and I was just struck again by how important it is to see the church as a place where all barriers are broken down as people come together in unity and under the gospel. It's just a blessing, an incredible blessing to see that. And so we're not about planting everything that's distinct. We're about bringing people together, because God is actually glorified in that, and that's what's going to happen forever. People from every kindred, tribe, tongue, and nation are going to worship God, worship Christ before the throne. This is consistent with the pattern of Paul as well, as Paul goes and plants churches as well. He keeps going. He keeps moving. He keeps spreading the gospel, and he even wanted to go to Spain. You know, he wanted to get beyond where he thought he could even go. And so we see this taking place in the scriptures. And so the principles are: the Great Commission demands an expansion to unreached people and regions. Success as a church is involvement somehow in the expansion of the gospel, both near and into unreached areas. So we need not fear that there are places that are hard to go. We need to get behind and send people to those places. And that's something we have to be praying about. And so pioneer missions is a priority, the expansion of the gospel in unreached areas. Indigenizing missions is important as well. That's the strengthening of the existing church so that they will take over the mission where they are. And some regions do need a reseeding to take place. You know, I get I criticize myself probably more than I get. What in the world am I doing in Greenville if I have such a burden for missions? Well, Greenville is growing so rapidly. Even in Greenville, we need more churches. There's places where the gospel has been abandoned that need a replanting of churches. They have church buildings, but they don't have the gospel. And then we need to go back to those places too, many times in Europe. Number four. You guys tired yet? Reshaping step number four. Clarify your role as a local church. So I've kind of talked about the what do we have to accomplish in missions around the world, everywhere. Now, how can we be involved in missions as a church most effectively? I'm backing up here now to the church. And clarify your role as a local church in missions. And that role, I think, can effectively be summarized in four parts. Okay, I think this is a really helpful way. It was for me to think, and I think it's helpful for your church as well. The local church is responsible for, first of all, sending. Okay? Sending. Responsible for sending. In Acts 13, we see the church sending Paul out on a mission. And again, this is not the role of a college. It's not the role of a mission board. It's not the role of some foundation, fundraising group. Okay? It's the role of the local church to send missionaries. And that's how it started, and that's how it should continue. Local church is responsible, because of that, the local church is responsible for evaluating a missionary's call. If we believe as churches that we are the ones responsible for sending missionaries, then we're going to be like, we need to pray for people to send, and we need to make sure they're the right people that we're sending. We need to evaluate their call, just like a church needs to evaluate the qualifications of their pastors and elders. Okay, pastors/elders. As they evaluate that, need to do that. Individuals in the church can use a variety of gifts to serve as senders. Neil Parolo wrote a book called Serving as Senders a couple decades ago. I think it's still extremely practical and helpful. And how can people, everyone in our church, get involved in missions, being a sending church? Here are just some ideas. And you can read his book to get more particular ideas. Moral support, that is encouragement, logistics. Some people are good at that. Giving, praying, communicating, reentry. You know, I still get most of the emails from our missionaries from inner city, and I love to communicate with them. That's maybe something God's gifted me with, is trying to encourage them through communication, and so I do that, and it's a blessing to have that back and forth with our missionaries. A lot of people can do that who might not be able to give a lot, or certainly aren't able to go, and so get people involved in sending. Supervising. Because we're responsible to send, we are also responsible for supervision or accountability for missions. Okay, sending church is primarily responsible for supervising their missionaries. The missionaries are responsible for communicating and reporting to their churches. We see this happening in Acts. Paul came back to the church and reported what God had done. And we should see that happening here. We send them out to do something, to fulfill the commission. So that's why I say missions is primarily task-oriented. We're going to plant churches in cultures, to evangelize and plant churches. And then the missionaries come back and say, this is what we've done. And we have the ability now to communicate very regularly. So this is what we're doing. This is what's being accomplished. And so missionaries are responsible for communicating and reporting to their churches. Supporting as well. Third thing, 3 John 5-8, they went out for the sake of the name, not accepting nothing from the Gentiles. We ought to support such men and be fellow workers with the truth. John encourages the church there about their support of missionaries that are going out for the sake of the name. And I think it's right and biblical to be supported from a sending field for a time and to do that. And it's also the fact that our support of missionaries is reflective of our view of God. And I think they went out and you supported them in a worthy manner, John says. So that is, when we support our missionaries for what they're doing, we are praising God with how we use our funds. I think it's a wonderful thing to support missionaries. Supporting is something that may be for a time period. If you're supporting a church planter, you may support them for a certain number of years. If you're supporting a missionary, you may support them for a certain number of years that's longer than that, depending on the task that they're accomplishing. Missionary support doesn't necessarily have to be lifelong. I think that's kind of something we have in our mind, that when we take on someone for support, it's like from here to whenever, no matter what you do. But I think missionary support should be tied to the task. And I think that would be a helpful way for us to think. And if they decide to do something else, they can come back and ask for more support. That's not a problem. Supplicating is the fourth role. I had to throw another S in there. But really, prayer. So there are a lot of things you can do with prayer. One of the best things I felt I did while I was a missions pastor is making sure what is communicated to the church gets to the people. like the missions reports, letters, they could be summarized, and we are praying for them. We're really behind them. And that is one of the maybe one of the best things I felt satisfaction in doing, is making sure we know what's going on so that we can pray for it. But do that in whatever means you can do that. Reshaping step number 5. Okay, and this is kind of, where do we go? Where do we go from here? Kind of giving you a really fast overview of the things that should be important. Let's look at these steps. Make plans and move purposefully toward your goals. This is the first one I think I had in your notes. Confidently beseech God for help and for laborers from within your church. Okay? Confidently beseech God for help and for laborers from within your church. It was so exciting to see as we focused on prayer at Inner City when I first came here under Pastor Norton's leadership. We focused on praying that God would raise up people from within our church to go out and plant churches and be missionaries, and would bring people to our seminary that we could train to do that. We really didn't have much of that before, much if any. And we started praying about it, first of all, and we saw God answer those prayers. And I'm so thankful that God, some of you are sitting here as answers to those prayers that we prayed. Pray for God. If you're like, we really don't have anyone to send, and I really don't know what to do, start by praying. God will answer those prayers. Communicate your philosophy clearly to your church as you develop it. Communicate it clearly. So preach through it if you're a pastor. Talk about it if you're in a missions committee. Make sure it forms the foundation of the way you think and evaluate appeals for support. But definitely communicate it. Don't just come up with it in your office and keep it on your computer. And people are like, why aren't you supporting my nephew? You know, he's going to do great things. And, well, it doesn't match our philosophy. What are you talking about? What's philosophy? What philosophy are you talking about? Communicate it clearly. Communicate your expectations clearly to your missionaries, your present missionaries. Say, this, we weren't really philosophically driven before, biblically driven. We've worked through this. We've prayed about this. This is our philosophy of missions, and we want to send that to every one of our missionaries. And you may have some that write back and say, you know, I really don't fit that. And so we're going to find some support elsewhere. Very few do that, but they might do that. Okay. Some others will be like, oh, no, here we are. You know, we're going to face some trouble. But it gives them a heads up, at least. And that's honoring them by giving them some time. But you need to communicate it to them. You don't certainly do not write a letter and say, we're ending your support. They're over there and somewhere in Asia, and they're like, I just lost $300 a month. I don't know. You know, I could use an extra $300 a month. I know that. But if Bob Jones told me tomorrow that my salary was being cut by 10%, I'd be in trouble, really. I mean, I'd maybe be good. I have to depend on the Lord more. I already do. Communicate clearly. Clarify budgets and solidify strategic partnerships. So as you work through this process, you certainly have to clarify your budgets, your line items. What can we as a church give to missions? You know, what can we really do? And now I want to solidify those who are very strategic for us. So, for instance, at Morningside, we had missionaries that were getting all levels of support. We had some that were from the church that were getting supported for $110. We had some people that were not from the church and weren't really doing a lot that we were really behind, were getting support for $400. So that was out of balance with our philosophy of missions. So really over the last 3 years that I've been involved in there, and I, again, I'm not the leader of it, so I'm not taking credit for it for sure, but as we've talked together about this, we started changing the support levels. We brought all the people that are sent from Morningside up to a certain level. We brought those who are with the mission board that are supported by Morningside up to another level, and we've adjusted the other ones. And as people have retired, we've been able to do that. So it's been very helpful. But you got to think through that kind of on a long-term basis and solidify, though, the strategic partnerships. Get behind them. And one of the ways we show them we're behind them is by how we support them. Cautiously move forward with new partnerships. So Dave Smith, our missions pastor, even got up at Sunday morning. He says, some have asked why we haven't taken on very many new missionaries lately. He said that from the pulpit. And the reason is we're trying to bring into alignment, you know, the people that we're really committed to. And so he explained that. I think that was very helpful. Some people were kind of like, why aren't we adding pins to the map, you know? And it's because we're trying to be more purposeful about that. So cautiously move forward with new partnerships. But if there's one that's, you're like, they come and you're like, this is our philosophy, and the lights come on, you know, you're like, bingo, this is the kind of person. Well, you can get behind them, even if it's a little bit at the beginning. And then you want to, with the purpose of increasing that. carefully, patiently, honorably in current relationships that do not follow your philosophy, strategy, and goals. Patiently and honorably and carefully in those relationships. And again, that's why it's important to communicate the philosophy ahead of time so that when you do start making the harder decisions, giving some time, people understand, you know, I don't like that you made that decision, but I understand why we made that decision. And that's important. And you have to make some tough decisions. You know, we had a situation, a relative of a family in our church, and we had to decide that we couldn't no longer support them. And because we had communicated the philosophy clearly ahead of time, the family understood, even though it's hard. It's hard to see your own family lose support. Creatively get your church more solidly involved in commission fulfillment. Okay, this is from the home church side of things. Creatively get your church more solidly involved in commission fulfillment. Using the serving ascenders outlines, for instance, you can do that. Now let's take a look at the Inner City Baptist Church philosophy of missions, and this is the end. I'm out of time. But this is something that we developed as a statement here at our church that I think is very helpful. Morningside, our current church, is working through a version of this. At least I changed the church name at the top, so that was good. So that was helpful, but making some other adjustments based on the makeup of our church there. Again, state it very clearly. This is the, I had a brief version that we would share with people as well when I was the missions pastor. This is a little bit fuller, but it's certainly not exhaustive. But you can see the purpose of missions, we aim to honor God by fulfilling the Great Commission by planting indigenous reproducing churches. And then that's spelled out there. The principles by which we make missions decisions, we primarily sought to support missionaries involved in church planting. Priorities given to missionaries going to pioneering fields. So it's a pretty simple statement, pretty straightforward. It really guided our decisions and gives some reasons for that. Secondarily, to support missionaries who are involved in indigenizing a church planting movement through pastoral training. And that is the secondary approach for us as a church. And there are some other guiding principles that are there. We sought to support people planting churches that replicate our theology and philosophy of ministry, of course. So that's, you know, but it's good to state these things so that people see them in writing and they understand them. Some of the priorities, we give priority support missionaries and church planters who have been a part of our church family for several years. They didn't necessarily have to grow up here, but they were engaged in our church body and life, and they get priority. Next consideration to those who came through the seminary, because that was a ministry of our church and it was very important to us. Next, who have received solid training, like-minded institution, or being sent from like-minded churches. And next consideration, which we didn't usually have a lot left over by then, but to missionaries or church planters from like-minded churches. When you have this kind of prioritization, it's much easier to make decisions about maybe personal relationships or people that you know just seem like great people, but they're not doing what fits to your priorities. And I think that's helpful. Practices, we talked about these accountability relationships. The sending church was the primary accountability. So even as a supporting church sometimes, we made sure that if we were supporting a missionary from another sending church, we didn't exceed the amount that they were supporting them for, or that if we did, because it was a church plant that's sending out a new missionary, we very clearly communicated with that church and the missionary that they're the ones that are primarily overseeing the missionary. Very clearly, and if they were with Grace Baptist Mission, we did that in writing, actually. And then some of our practices, we believe a mission agency is helpful. They function in a service partnership with a sending church and church planner, okay? Primarily serving them in logistical areas, financial and logistical areas. Very thankful for good mission boards. But we believe these things are important. Any questions? It's lunchtime, and you all are probably hungry. I also included a prayer which promotes the progress of the mission. I think it's a good prayer guide for folks in praying for missions. Jacob?
How do you see the role of supervising for a non-sending church versus a sending church?
I think as far as if you see a missionary not maybe doing what you're supporting them to doing, we would talk to the sending church about that first. So for a supporting church, you still have priorities, and you took them on for a task to accomplish what you're supporting them for. And if you see them deviating from the task, go to the sending church and say, this is what we're supporting them for, but this is what we seem to see happening. The sending church is like, well, I don't know, mission board takes care of that. Then change your support eventually over time. But usually that helps. That's very helpful. That's what we do. That's what we would do in practice. Anyone else?
Will this be up digitally?
I think so, yeah. I think I was told everything would be up. So, which probably includes the recording. I hope I didn't say anything stupid. I probably did. Yes?
Back to the beginning when you were talking about church support, individual support.
Yeah.
Do you feel like missionaries should pursue individual support as much, or just that focus should be on church support because it allows everyone in the congregation to get involved there?
Yeah.
Clarify that a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't think it's an issue of right and wrong, like morally. So if you get individuals that say, I want to support you, my church doesn't do missions, we're not really, or they're in a place that maybe doesn't have a church that supports independent missionaries, they're a board, they support boards or whatever, in a Southern Baptist church, and they want to give you support. What I would ask, though, as a missionary, I would say, as long as it's not taking away from your support for your church, you're giving to your church, it's above that, it's extra, for instance. You're not saying, like, I don't like what my church is doing, so I'm going to do this instead, then that's great. We're glad to receive, you know, the support. Really appreciate it. That's what I do. But I say primarily, I think that's the term, pursuing support from churches is the most healthy setup. So certainly it's easier to raise support from individuals. It's not easy for some people. I'm not good at that, but... Would any of you like to support me for student care director at Bob Jones? That's a ministry. Come on. No, I get paid for doing it. So, any other questions? That's a good question. When it comes to transitioning support, our practice would usually be to wait until the next furlough the missionary has, and then support them through the next year of that time period, so that they have opportunity to raise support when they're home on a furlough. That was usually our practice here, and I think that was honorable to the missionaries, and they very seldom complained about that. They understood, so, and they were grateful. Yeah.
What do you do for retiring?
That's a great question. Morningside has a policy that they reduce support to 25% of what they were supporting them for as a retiring missionary. That's the church I go to in Greenville. So they actually have a policy for that. I think from the front end, when you're taking on missionary support, we should make sure they're planning for retirement. And I think most boards are doing that now, whereas it wasn't as popular. But we do have missionaries retiring now that didn't plan for retirement. They opted out of Social Security and such. And I think we have to make individual decisions. Depends on the closeness of their relationship to our church. So, yeah, that's a hard question. That's a very good question. And maybe if you have some insight into that, you probably do. I think it'd be helpful.
I'm retired.
Yeah. You'll take all the support you can get, right? Yeah. All right. And that is a hard thing. And but yeah, Morningside, if they're from our church and if they come back to our church, we try to do more too. So yeah, that's good. Anything else? All right. Thank you for your attention.